Hey everyone, welcome to episode 53 of Siths and Giggles. I am your host Casey, and I am joined by Krista. How you doing, Krista?
Oh, not too bad, Casey. Hanging in there. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Ready to talk some Star Wars?
Oh, sorry, that was the longest yawn ever. But yes.
Okay, so tonight we are talking about canon in Star Wars. And generally, canon in fandoms in general. So, like, we read a post that was on Gizmodo, written by James Whitbrook, the title of which was, "Our Fascination with Canon is Killing the Way We Value Stories." And the header photo for this article was perfect. It was the Grand Inquisitor from the Star Wars comics and also the Star Wars Rebels TV show, reading through like the Jedi texts in the Jedi temple, and he's just like throwing one of them away and he's like drivel. And I thought that was perfect for the way that like so many people react to Star Wars stories now.
I kind of had this realization, like, the more that after I read this article and the more I thought about it, is fandom today and the outrage we see over, you know, the various things that we see outrage over, Casey, as I'm sure you're aware, is a lot like history, in a sense, as in the victors are the ones who are writing it, so to speak, and for the longest time in fandom and in Star Wars, it was white, straight men in charge of Star Wars.
Right.
And now we're slowly starting to see, you know, not necessarily less straight white men, because, alas, they're still in abundance. No offense to you, Casey.
Totally cool.
But we're starting to see, you know, Kathleen Kennedy comes in. She's a woman. She's given basically, like, all of the power over Star Wars since Disney's purchased it. We're seeing, you know, people in charge of films and stuff that are cognizant and aware that, hey, you know, there's more people out there than just, you know, straight white dudes. Let's get some more of those in our films. We're getting authors and, you know, comic book authors and illustrators and stuff coming forward with, like, you know, women, people of color. We're seeing a lot more diversity in the people that are rating it. So as a result, we're now seeing a lot more diversity in Star Wars itself. And that is pissing some people off, because in their minds, that's not, you know, I've seen people argue, oh, that's not canon for a girl to be the Jedi savior. Like, that can't be canon, because, you know, we haven't seen that. That's never happened. So therefore, it can't. We're seeing a lot of that, and I think, you know, it ultimately comes down to, in a way, for how people react when they see, you know, they read something in history from a different country, or, you know, even just from a different point of view, and they get all huffity and uppity over it because they disagree with, you know, oh, well, you know, the U.S. was painted so badly there, or why do we call, the prime example I can think of would be the U.S. American War. We're taught about it like, hey, the U.S. did great, and we like that story. It didn't take until I was in college that I actually had a history professor show us the another way of looking at it, which was that, oh, you know, down in Mexico and stuff, it was called the War of Northern Aggression, and this is why. And I think the same people in class who kind of got outraged over being taught that and shown that perspective remind me a lot of the same people who get pissed because, you know, something in Star Wars has now been changed, or, you know, they've diversified, or the main character is a girl, and they don't like it, so that they're gonna argue that that's not real. It can't be real. And even if they say it's real, well, they're dumb.
That's an interesting point that I had never considered. Like, I'm guessing that, like, because, like, yeah, we're taught about, like, the founding fathers in school. And it's not until college or, like, later in high school, if you have a good history teacher, that we're taught that, like, the founding fathers were slave owners.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that, like, if you made a Venn diagram of people who react poorly to finding out the founding fathers owned slaves and people who, like, react poorly to the main Jedi in the sequel trilogy being a girl, I'm guessing it's a circle. It's like one big fat circle.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think the same people who are going to bend over backwards to defend the founding fathers for owning slaves, well, it's not their fault. That was just how things were. It doesn't make it okay.
No, that doesn't make it okay. And it's right to criticize them for that. And now, but though, yeah, and those people are now looking at Star Wars stories written today and criticizing them. Like, yeah, this isn't the Star Wars I grew up with. This isn't what George Lucas taught me growing up. And it's like, yeah, it kind of is. I mean, like, you look at the original trilogy and, like, one of the main protagonists was a strong woman who, you know, you would think that, like, growing up with her, they would be set and ready to accept a character like Rey, but lo and behold, they're not.
And as much as, like, the argument that, you know, I've seen get thrown around is, well, we're not opposed, like, we don't hate Rey because we have an issue with, you know, a strong, badass female character because we didn't hate Leia. Well, no, well, yes, Leia was a strong, badass female character. That also wasn't her primary role. Her primary role, in my opinion, or at least secondary role, was to be a love interest.
Right.
From the off, be it, like, you know, in A New Hope, where they were leaning towards her and Luke, and then, or versus once, you know, they switched and it was her and Han, regardless it. It was always, like, right there in your face, like, love interest, that's my job.
It,
in my opinion.
Right, no. And the only thing I can say in Lucas's defense in the original trilogy is that, like, it wasn't as egregious with Leia, I think, as it was with Padme.
Oh, no.
Because,
I agree,
like,
100%.
Yeah. Because, like,
100%.
By the end of the prequel trilogy, like, Padme's sole role was to just, like, bear Anakin's children. And, like, that's
100%.
All she did, yeah. So, like, yeah, it wasn't as egregious. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, and Rey doesn't, she's not burdened with that at all.
No.
Like, she is.
Despite
what some of the Reylos.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. But then I was like, maybe not. We won't poke the hornet's nest.
No,
I don't think the hornet's nest knows we exist, so it's fine.
But, like, yeah, I mean, like, Rey is definitely a product of her time that she has written, because she's definitely not there to be anyone's love interest. And, like, you can even, like, you can, okay, so, like, you can look at her story in The Last Jedi and argue that, as far as, like, Luke's story goes, she's still serving the role of, like, advancing, like, another guy's story.
Yeah.
But it's not a love story.
I agree with that, but I also think in a lesser way, and maybe in a roundabout way, her advancing Luke's story helped advance her own story in the long run, even if it necessarily wasn't, like, visually playing out in screen in front of us.
Right. Right.
But no, you are correct. I mean, like, she's one of the few instances we have in Star Wars, especially in the films, where we have a female character who is the true main character. She's not being propped up as a, you know, as a love interest. She's not being you know, just dragged through because you have to have a token girl. Like, she's not being used to further advance. I feel like you could argue the Luke one a little bit. She's not being used to prop up or advance any male characters.
Even, like, surprisingly, like, they even handled it the right way at the end of The Rise of Skywalker. Because, like, I thought for sure the way the story was being set up, I thought, like, Ben was going to run in and, like, save the day and, like, save her from the Emperor.
Yeah.
And, like, that didn't happen. You know, Emperor tossed him down a pit and then Rey had to carry on her own. Which I enjoyed very much. We still have the kiss, though.
I just...
Which, according to the novelization, was not a romantic kiss. Which, I got some issues with that.
I don't understand. Who just kisses someone like that if it's not at all romantic? Romantically driven.
It never happened to me.
So, like, I don't buy that. I don't. I feel like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
No, I totally agree with that.
They want to have it both ways. They want to have the kiss to appease, you know, the section of fandom who wanted that. And then they want to have that in the novelization where that's kind of like, but wait.
Oh, yeah. No, it was 100% a romantic kiss on screen.
Yeah.
Like, because you don't kiss someone like that without, like, any...
You don't...
Romantic,
yeah.
Like, oh, you held the door open for me? Let me give you a big kiss.
Full on. Yeah. Let's make out.
Yeah. Like,
no. No. Perhaps J.J. Abrams, if you genuinely think that, then maybe you should go see somebody about that, because that's no...
Yeah, I don't know what's happening in his life on, like, a day-to-day basis.
We got some poor social cues. I don't know. Part of me doesn't put a whole lot of stock, into the kiss, regardless, you know... Yes, it's romantically leaning in the film. Yes, the novelization says it wasn't. Yes, I didn't really care for it. I kind of look at it as you can completely take it out of the story and it doesn't change the story. Like, no aspect of the film would be affected if you took out the kiss.
No, I don't think... Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it would be affected
at all. So therefore...
At all.
I don't put a lot of stock into it or trying to figure out, like, what it exactly meant or how it affected them, you know, canonically going forward. So because you can legitimately take it from the movie and have it not affect a single thing.
Agreed. Agreed. So for the article talking about canon, let me ask you this, because, like, sometimes I am guilty of this. When you read or watch Star Wars, especially reading, like, if you get into, like, the books and the comics and things, like, how much do you ever get concerned with whether or not a story is canon or, like, where it fits in?
I don't really, because... I look at it in the sense is when I'm watching the movies, chances are the first, you know, handful of times I'm watching the movies, I'm not going to remember random tidbits and stuff from the books and the comics the first time through.
Right.
So, you know, if something contradicts one or the other, I usually don't pick up on it. At least not right away. And eventually if I do pick up on it, I'm just of the mind where I'm like, you know, the majority of people are only watching, you know, only consuming it in this form. So if they're going to consume it in that form, that's probably how Disney wants it to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, well, but in a book and in you know, an obscure comic, it said this. Well, chances are is the less people are probably consuming it in that form. Not that it has less weight. I guess I don't demand that everything be, you know, 100% fit.
Right. I got really, I don't want to say obsessed with canon, but like I was concerned about canon when I first started reading the new canon books, because like there was so much stuff out there, especially written like on the borderline between like pre like 2014 and like post 2014 when Disney declared that like all the EU stuff was legends. I got like concerned about like, okay, is this story I'm reading canon? Like, does this count for like the main overall story I'm reading now? Now I can't say I care about it very much.
I guess my big thing is I've never once sat there and, you know, been consuming, you know, Star Wars in some shape or, you know, form, be it movie, TV, book, comic, video game, whatever, and sat there and been like, at like midway through, find out that it's not canon and just all of a sudden be like, well, what, this sucks now. Like, it being canon has no bearing on my enjoyment
right.
of said thing.
And I can understand the article's main point about how, in a lot of ways, canon is ruining the experience for a lot of people. A big example is Han shooting Greedo in A New Hope.
Yeah.
And I was totally guilty of that for a long time. Like, my Instagram, like, profile pic was just, like, the words Han shot first. Now I don't care. There was actually, back when, like, Pablo Hidalgo from Lucasfilm Story Group still had a public Twitter, he had a really good explanation on that where he said that, like, canon doesn't account for things like the medium that you're watching it on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is canon for that story is that Greedo went into a bar and confronted Han and Greedo died. Other than that, accounts vary. Like, there may be, from someone's point of view, Han shot first and only Han shot. From another person's point of view, Greedo shot and then Han shot. In the book, from a certain point of view, I think that story is actually told from like four or five different points of view, and none of the stories does the story go the same way each time. But like, what the canon story is that,
I mean,
they confronted each other and Han walked away.
I hate to do it. The history comparison.
Yeah.
The Battle of Lexington and Concord. The shot heard round the world. Nobody knows who shot it. The British say we did. We say the British did. Like, it's all a matter of perspective. That's what it comes down to. And canon, as much as someone, like, I hate to use the comparison, canon is being written in the perspective of how somebody wants it to be told. So, right. Yes, you're going to have differing perspectives in each thing. Might be writing a story about the exact same, you know, time period character as somebody else's, and she might write the character one, like, say that the character does this because of this reason, and then you may get to a movie, and it might be like, oh, but in the movie, it shows it doing it as that for this reason. Like, it is. It's canon is ultimately perspective.
I will say that since I stopped caring about canon so much, my enjoyment of Star Wars has increased so much because of it.
That's like, so Marvel, the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, I am one person who I very much enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
I could give two shits about the canon because didn't after Endgame people freak out because I can't remember the chick's name. Blonde haired girl, she kissed Steve. Which we find out that she's related to Peggy, and then like Sharon he goes Carter. Back in time, and like we find out she grew up with him like that and knew it the entire time and still kissed him anyways. Like people freaking out about that, and for me, I'm just like, who gives a shit? You're thinking about it too much. Like, you honestly think that somebody, when they wrote that, they were like, oh, wait a minute. No.
Which is funny because the people who wrote Endgame also wrote Civil War. So
yeah, like, no.
And, like, that's one that, like, Marvel, I was thinking about this before we started recording. Marvel, like, if you care about canon, I would say the MCU has to be, like, way less stressful because it's basically just the movies.
Yeah.
And, like, there's TV shows that take place kind of in the same universe, but they don't reference each other. Like, at least for that, you only have to worry about the movies. Like, you don't have to worry about movies and books and comics and whatever else gets released. Like, I don't know.
I liked there was a line in that article. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
While you're looking for it, I want to say also that I've also found that, like, since I've started trying to consume every, like, piece of Star Wars media out there, it's all that in and of itself has also increased my overall enjoyment of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to let it go if I don't like something because I know that, like, another Star Wars thing is going to be coming out soon enough, and maybe I'll enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Hang on, where am I trying to find? Oh, okay, here we go. So it's from like one of the last paragraphs, essentially, and it talks about how, you know, this craving and everything for canon essentially builds to a toxic attitude, not just to the way we talk about the pieces of media from a critical perspective, but in fan circles as well. The hunger for facts above all else leads to things like filler episode becoming a derogatory term for stories that don't advance the larger ongoing plot of a narrative or don't include some shocking new revelation that someone can add to a list. It predicates the gatekeeping act of being a fan that is built on how much you know about a thing over whether actually you enjoy that thing or not. And that right there, that last line, it predicates the gatekeeping act of being a fan that is built on how much you know about a thing over whether you actually enjoy the thing or not. And that is plaguing the Star Wars fandom.
I think the part about, like, the shocking new revelation really stands out to me because I think in a lot of ways, that's what led a lot of, like that was, I think, the driving point behind the backlash to The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you also, okay, so you had, like, Rey as the protagonist, and then you had Rose and everything. Like, those also, there was certainly, like, a prevalent, like, racist and, like, misogynistic backlash to The Last Jedi. But, like, in addition to that, I think that there was backlash because if you look at The Force Awakens, like, JJ set up a lot of, like, a big old mystery box with that movie. Like, who were Rey's parents? Like, that was a big one. Like, who is Snoke? And, like, Rian Johnson just kind of, like, didn't matter who Snoke was, you know, and Rey's parents were nobody. Like, he took that mystery box that, like, JJ set up, and he did not give any, like, shocking new revelations to it. And that, and you see how people reacted to that. So that's a great point by the author of that article.
I think another good, like, in regards to the filler episode line, I think a good example of that would probably be, like, episodes 1 and 2 of the final seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
a lot of people dislike them because, you know, it was just people talking and, you know, not a whole lot of action. And I felt like those were probably two of the strongest episodes of that season, even though most people referred to them strictly as filler episodes. I actually thought it was the best because we got to see, you know, the characters, and we got to see the culmination of, you know, 8 seasons or so of, you know, arc that that character was on come to a culmination. And I thought it was really cool. Case in point, Sir Bran of Tarth. That was awesome. I loved seeing that. I think you need episodes like that. You can't always have it go, 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 go. Or it just becomes nothing matters. Nothing has value or weight to it. If everything is, you know, resolved or pushed onto a back burner an episode later or a movie later.
I think the filler episode is one of like the laziest criticisms of television shows. For television shows, it's lazy to like label them filler episodes. For movies, I think like the laziest criticism is, oh, well, that movie was like a half hour too long.
Yeah. I think if you dub something as, oh, it was a filler, and if you back it up with, well, nothing exciting happened, it really makes me question how much stock to actually put in your opinion of, you know, media and pop culture then.
Okay.
If you have to have something happening 24/7 to enjoy something.
I do have to admit, because I just called a bunch of people lazy when it comes to like filler episodes, I do have to admit I'm guilty of that one myself though.
Hopefully
that doesn't change your opinion of me.
No, it doesn't, because I too am guilty of being like, oh, that's a filler episode. But at the same time, I can back it up more with, well, nothing exciting happened. I can back it up past, I don't know, there was no fights. There was nothing exciting happened.
For me, I'm really guilty of it when it comes to, like, The Walking Dead. Especially, I don't know if you ever watched that show or kept up with it either.
I have tried to watch that show so many times where I started it once. I got, like, halfway to the prison section. Like halfway through the prison part, stopped for years, picked it back up again where I left off, watched it up through like halfway through Negan's entire storyline.
Okay, so then you're gonna get what when I say that I really criticize the show because like there was no antagonist between the governor and Negan. I mean, like, yes. Think of it. That was like 4.5 seasons of no main antagonist on your show, and I felt that like
that's
so
filler.
Yeah, so many of the episodes felt like filler. If it was more like filler seasons as opposed to like filler episodes.
I don't see anything wrong with calling that like straight up filler. Because that's what it is, because you can go back, and I say this as someone who doesn't remember a single thing that happened in some of those seasons, and it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't. And they kept you going back because they would periodically kill off a main character.
Yeah.
Like, that to me, that's lazy writing on the levels that we started to get with the end of the later seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. In which, I mean, I'm kind of in the minority because, like, I really did like the last 2 seasons of Game of Thrones.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I did, too.
I would say that, like, the only thing I didn't like the Battle of Winterfell episode. And that was like 100% just because it was like the darkness of it.
I'm a blind ass bitch. That was hard as shit to watch.
I was watching it on my iPad. I thought my iPad was like, I thought it was dead.
Had this story, yeah. But yes, I know. Yeah.
And then I didn't like the episode where Danny burn down all of King's Landing.
We're not going to talk about, you don't want me to talk about that episode, Casey. We should just move on.
That was it. That episode did not fit into the canon of Game of Thrones.
That episode does not exist.
But no, like, I'm in the minority because, like, those are the only two episodes I really didn't like in those two seasons. I did like the finale. I liked the finale. I liked how pretty much the story ended for just about everyone.
Nothing annoyed me more. Well, no, many things annoyed me more. But I was not a fan of Bran becoming king.
I thought it was... Okay, are you going to, like, kill me if I give you my explanation for why? Oh. Okay, so, like, first let me say that, like, I guess I was fine with how they ended it with Dany because there was nothing else they can do with her at that point. They kind of, like, ruined any chance of her, like, getting out of that season. I was okay with Bran becoming the king because we knew that, like, once, crap, what is Sophie Turner's character's name?
Sansa.
Okay, so we knew that, like, once Sansa became Queen of the North and she had the opportunity to, like, become an independent kingdom, like, we knew that she wasn't going to become the Queen of Winterfell, or of Westeros.
Yes.
We knew that it made sense to me that Arya wouldn't want it either, because Arya is going to go off and explore. That's what she does.
Yes.
She's not a person who is made to, like, stay in one place and rule.
She never wanted to be a fancy lady in a castle.
Right.
She wanted to be a knight.
Right. It wasn't going to be Tyrion for a number of reasons. And
it would have been great.
He would have had, like, it would have been fun to see, but, like, I would want, like, a spinoff of him being the king.
Yes.
And then Jon, like, Jon didn't really want it either, but then he became...
He was never going to be king.
Well, he became the king beyond the wall anyway.
Eh.
So, like, which I thought...
No way.
But I thought that that was a good ending for him, because how much, like, shit did he take from everyone on the wall for so many seasons for, like, being, like, okay with the wildlings?
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was... And the wildlings accepted him. I thought that was actually a great ending for him. So, like...
I do not hate Jon's ending in the slightest. Yeah. I never expected him to be king of anything.
So, once you get everyone's logical ending out of the way, that leaves you with Bran, who...
I know. Like, I understand it, and I come to terms with it, because it makes, yes, it logically makes sense, but at the same time, I'm also like, you basically didn't even have him on the show for an entire season.
No, you didn't. Which I did. I didn't know this until I rewatched it, but you're right. He was literally not on for an entire season.
Yeah. Like, as a fan, I gave who shits about his character on the show.
I
did not care. I was not invested in Bran. Now, I will say, in the books, Bran's character is written so much better and so much cooler that I actually give a shit.
Uh-huh.
But the show just made me not care about his character.
I would say the only thing that really annoyed me about him becoming the king was when Tyrion was like, who has a better story than Bran the Broken? It was like, well, they all have some pretty interesting stories. His really isn't the best. Like, that was an odd word choice on the writers. But, like, other than that, like, I was fine with it. I didn't really get the backlash of the last season until it was all said and done. And then, like, Benioff and Weiss started talking to the press. And then you realize that, like, these guys kind of, like, bamboozled HBO into giving them a series. And then
they really did.
And then on top of that, it was like, holy shit, these guys are going to have a whole Star Wars trilogy too. Like, I don't, like, that was the first time where, like, I actually joined the crowd and was like, I do not want them to have a Star Wars series.
Yeah, no, I was so excited when it got announced that they were no longer doing it, because that was also going to be, I think, the first Star Wars films we got, if I recall correctly.
I think that, yeah, that was. And that was,
so,
that, and I did the, I did a complete 180 on that. Because they got announced, I think it was like right after season six that they were getting their trilogy.
Was it that?
It was a while ago. Yeah, it was a while. It was either right after season six or right before season seven.
I can't remember, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, so, like, of course, like, coming off of season six, I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, man, give Benioff and Weiss a trilogy. Like, as my wife said when it got announced, she was like, hell yeah, space titties. So, yeah, that was, like, my wife's reaction to it. But, yeah, and then, like, I did a complete 180 because, like, I didn't want them anywhere near Star Wars, especially when I found out that, like, the rumor was that, like, their story was going to be, like, the origin of the Jedi. And I was like, no, I don't want these guys, like, within 1,000 feet of the Jedi and telling, like, their origin story at all.
No, that would have been terrible. It truly would have been terrible.
Yeah. Give me Rian Johnson all day. Give me, like, 10 Rian Johnson trilogies.
I want to... So, in... to continue on the topic of canon and whatnot, one of the articles that I found was actually more of a blog post by the author Ben Monroe.
Okay.
This came on February 9th, and he briefly mentioned, you know, remembering something from a passage he read in the book Jung on Mythology.
Okay.
And in it, he goes, simply, that humans need myths. We crave important stories to help us understand who we are. And Jung went on to say, if a person has no accepted mythology to hang on to, they'll create one of their own. He goes, and this popped into my head, and suddenly I had a revelation about why some people get so upset about canon and fandom or new elements that they don't like or differences in a film made from my favorite book. And many will fly into tirades about the new or changed element as if the disruption of their fandom was a personal insult. For example, lots of reaction to the Star Wars prequel or The Last Jedi or the film adaptation of The Dark Tower. And then from this, I inferred that in the modern world, where people have drawn more away from organized religion, there are those who are, for better or worse, have taken entertainment property to heart, embracing it as something of a personal mythology. And of course, that means that any change to that mythology that will be met by them with resistance, because on some level, they almost feel that their beliefs are being attacked.
I can definitely agree with that.
I find that to be very true.
I don't know anyone who hates a film adaptation of a book more than, like, the people who love the book.
Yeah.
Like, I can probably count on one hand, like, the number of times where I found that to be not the case. Other than that, yeah. Like,
I feel like the Harry Potter books got a fair bit amount of that.
Harry Potter books got a fair amount of that. Again, oh my god, I'm guilty of that too.
Like, especially in the late books. Like, I remember when they made the change in about the Prisoner of Azkaban to them being able to wear, like, normal clothes,
mm-hmm.
not having to be in the uniform all the time. I remember people getting really upset about that because in the book, they're in the uniform, like, all the time.
That made Harry Potter so easy to cosplay, though, because you can just wear your clothes and carry around the wand, and suddenly you were in the Harry Potter story. But no, I think that, like, for me, I think the biggest criticism I've had from the books to the movies is I thought they really downplayed Lily's role in the story. Because, like, you watch the movies and it doesn't really get into the whole, like, the sacrifice that she made and how that protected Harry for 18 years.
I feel like they did, but they really just glossed over it to focus more on Snape and how it affected him.
Yeah. And they never actually said in the movie that, like, his father was, like, and his friends were, like, the ones who created the Marauder's Map. They also left that out. Now, I enjoy the movies. Like, they didn't ruin anything for me in terms of, like, my enjoying the books. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, that's definitely an adaptation that, like, I could take or leave.
Mm-hmm.
Adaptations I can think that, like, were enjoyed by people. Probably, I would say, like, the biggest one would probably be, like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I was young when most of the Lord of the Rings, yes, I was young for most of the Star Wars movies, too, and obviously I wasn't even alive for the original trilogy. I wish everybody could see Casey's face
it
when
just,
I said
that. Oh, my God, it kills me when you say that, like, you were young, and, like, I'm thinking about... I was old enough to drive myself to the... I was an adult when all three movies came out.
Let me see. So, Lord of the Rings. The Fellowship of the Ring came out in 2001.
I was 19.
I was... Math is not my strong suit. I was 8. I was 8. Oh, and I distinctly remember I had the Fellowship of the Ring on VHS. I don't know why, but I did.
Okay.
At the age of 8. I was terrified of that movie. The Ringwraiths are scary as fuck.
I liked how yesterday we were talking about Billie Lourd, and I told you that, like, she was in American Horror Story, and, like, you never even bothered to, like, respond to that.
I'm just like, meh. Although, this is terrible. Like, I watched Booksmart last night for the first time, for those listening, and I realized, you know, the one character in it, I was like, oh, she's really good looking. And so then there was a scene, and she made this face expression, and I'm like, why does she look like Carrie Fisher? Why does she look like Carrie Fisher? IMDb'd it real quick, and I'm like, holy shit, that's Billie Lourd. Holy shit, Billie Lourd is hot as fuck. That was my entire thought process right there. Because I'm just used to seeing Billie Lourd in Star Wars. Like, that's it. I mean, she's attractive then, too, but, like, that just really kind of took me back, and then I was a little scarred.
I'm looking. Holy shit, she's short.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so was Carrie.
She's 5'1". How tall was Carrie Fisher?
I'll find out.
She was also 5'1". Man.
Yeah, because Debbie, what's her last name?
Reynolds.
Reynolds was,
She was 5'2". Well, okay. What is Mark Hamill?
He's a short dude, ain't he?
He's 5'9". He's taller than me. Harrison Ford is... This podcast just went somewhere. 6'1". Man, they did some, like, interesting camera angles with Carrie Fisher in those movies.
I mean, they probably... A, she probably had heels on. B, you could probably easily put her on a box.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what they do with Robert Downey Jr. His short little ass.
Why? What's he? Robert Downey Jr. height. He's 5'9".
Okay, and now Google the heights of Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pratt. Like,
Chris Evans is 6 foot. Chris Hemsworth.
Let's see if...
is 6'3". Okay, point taken.
So, like, well, yes, it doesn't seem like it would be a huge difference in real life. Like, when you're trying to portray him as an equal, you know, superhero.
Tom Cruise is 5'7".
F Tom Cruise.
I always get a kick out of that.
He has no, like, the middle of his, mouth is one tooth.
What?
Look at a picture of his smile, Casey. Google Tom Cruise teeth. You will never unsee it again.
Oh my goodness.
You will never unsee it again.
I never... I learned something interesting over the weekend I never knew. Did you ever watch Scrubs?
No.
You never watched it? Okay. Did you ever watch Clueless?
Like here and there, bits and pieces. I've never sat down and watched it in its entirety.
Okay, well, you know, like, Donald Faison, who was... If you don't know who Donald Faison is, then it's the story's going to mean, like, nothing to you.
Yes, I know who Donald Faison is.
Okay, well, like, he actually has, until, like, he was much, much older in life, like, he had baby teeth. Like, he had baby teeth well into, like, adulthood. And, like, I found out that when he was filming Clueless, they gave him fake braces to hide his baby teeth. I found this out because I started listening to a Scrubs podcast with him.
Oh my god, I just googled it.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's wild.
Which I didn't even know that that was possible for, like, a grown person to have baby teeth.
I didn't either. That's wild.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have anything else for this podcast? Because we went off on it. We went on a detour.
It wasn't that big of a detour.
Oh, Lord of the Rings. I would say that for those movies, Peter Jackson packed as much of, like, Lord of the Rings lore into them as he possibly could, especially if you're talking about the extended editions. And, like, as far as backlash goes, I know in my entire life I've met, like, one person who did not like the movies. Because
that's crazy, because I was gonna say, so many people don't like the Hobbit trilogy.
Oh, the Hobbit trilogy is, like, a completely different story as far as, like, fan backlash. Yeah. I liked the Hobbit trilogy. I've also never read the Hobbit book. I'm sure that that's not a coincidence.
I don't know. I read it and I watched them and I enjoyed the Hobbit movies. They were a little long.
Yeah, they are.
They were good.
I've heard that, like, they add a lot more than what's in the book. Like, I've heard that, like, if he followed the books faithfully, like, it would not have to be 3 movies long.
Oh, no, 100%. It would not have had to have been 3 movies long, especially the length of those 3 movies. Like, the run times for each of them were insane.
Yeah. Well, didn't they add a lot of, like, the ring and, like, Sauron lore that, like, Tolkien hadn't even, like, conceived of in his head yet when he wrote the Hobbit book?
Yeah, so, like, the Hobbit, the Destiny, wait, is that the first one?
I think the first one was An Unexpected Journey.
Okay, so that runtime was 3 hours and 2 minutes. And then you had 2014. And you had The Desolation of Smaug, which was 3 hours and 7 minutes. And then finally you get to the Battle of the Five Armies, and it is 2 hours and 44 minutes.
And, like, guess what the most common criticism of those 3 movies are?
Half hour too long.
Yes. Although Battle of the Five Armies is shorter than I remember that being.
Same. I feel like they just felt very long too.
The only other movie adaptation I can think of where, like, just about everyone agrees that it was a better movie than the book was The Godfather.
So you're going to hate me. I've never actually watched The Godfather.
No, I'm not going to hate you for that. If you had told me that like 10 years ago, I might have been like, oh my God, you've never seen The Godfather. You have to watch it. But like, I don't care about stuff like that anymore. I used to.
As we've learned, Casey is no longer an elitist, guys, yeah. When it comes to pop culture and media.
I don't care if you've seen The Godfather, Goodfellas, any of those movies. I don't care if you've never seen Star Wars. I'm kind of like curious what you've done with your life if you've never seen Star Wars. I'm curious like how that came to be, but I don't care. Like live your life. Like what you like.
I've never watched all of the Lord of the Rings movies.
Really?
Nope.
But you've watched all three Hobbit movies?
Yep.
That's interesting.
I suppose. I don't know.
Well,
I have not.
If you ever want to watch them, they're on my one streaming account that you have the password for.
Okay.
We're quarantined. You can't do anything else.
Well, this is true, but I also am still working in the office, so yeah, that's my true. Life isn't too disrupted.
My friend Devin, who just recently watched like Star Wars for the first time, and she started watching the Marvel movies. She wanted to watch the Lord of the Rings movies, and it's a whole like it's not a bucket list thing, but it's a list of things that she's trying to do before she turns 30.
Okay.
So like me being the helpful friend, I was like, oh, they're in my account thing that you have the password for. Go ahead and watch them. Didn't think to tell her that like they were the extended editions. So that's easily adding like another 30 to 45 minutes to her watching experience. And like her biggest complaint for the first one was like, oh my God, it was so boring and so long. And like, it's like, funny story. So like, those are extended editions. Those are not like
the theatrical cuts.
Yeah, those are like the super nerd editions of those movies.
Oh wow.
She liked the last two though.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably I'm not gonna say if I will. When I get around to watching them, I plan on watching the extended editions.
Yeah.
Just to say that I did.
Of everything she started watching for the first time, though, she's liked Star Wars the best.
Hype, like as it should be.
Yeah, like she's a Star Wars fan now. I love it.
Devin's great. Devin's got a good taste.
Yeah, she shares your feelings on Captain America.
I know. We've had that discussion.
Have you?
We have.
Does your dislike of Captain America extend to Chris Evans himself?
No.
No? Okay.
I don't hate Chris Evans.
Okay.
I don't think he is like God's gift to Earth like so many make him out to be. I think he is one of the better Chrises in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Really, there's only one Chris that I do not like.
Pratt.
Which upsets me, yes.
I don't think anyone likes Pratt. Which is...
This is some super homophobic church. And then defended it.
Did he?
Because they were cool with his divorce. Yeah.
God.
So, which pains me because I loved Parks and Rec and I loved Andy.
I still love Parks and Rec. And
I mean, same.
Yeah.
Same. But it just upsets me now that I learned that Chris Pratt is probably a homophobic douche.
I hope that's not true.
I mean, he definitely, the whole him defending his church because
yeah,
of
no,
yeah, his divorce, that's true. I know that. I've seen the quotes.
Did he actually say he was defending them because they supported his divorce?
No, whenever, I forget what like the actual quote was, but he was like, they're extremely understanding and supportive. He's like, they were of me when, you know, with my divorce, like implying that him being divorced is on the same level as like being gay. So if they were cool with him being divorced, they would be cool with them being gay. But like the church has like a massive history of being extremely anti-LGBTQ.
That's a shame.
Indeed, indeed.
He was my least favorite Chris anyway.
Likewise.
It's Evans, Pine, Hemsworth, Pratt.
Hemsworth, Evans, Pine, Chasm, Pratt.
Who?
Chasm, just the chasm, like a crater.
Oh, okay.
Gap.
I was just like, what Chris is that? I don't know Chris Chasm.
Oh, God, Casey.
Chris O'Donnell.
Who's that?
Robin from the 90s Batman movies.
That's not Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, neither was Chris Prime or Chris Pine, but we counted him.
Isn't he in it now? I thought he is in the.
No, he's in Wonder Woman.
God damn it!
I was just doing Chris's in general.
Oh yes, in general. No. I don't know. I'm losing my mind. I say that's a good spot to call it because I'm losing my mind.
All right. Everyone, thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Darth Hockey. Krista, where can people follow you?
I am also on Twitter at Critter, KRI3TSE3Rs.
All right. And then you can follow the podcast at Sith's Giggles Pod. Check us out on iTunes, Google Podcast, and Spreaker.com. Everyone, thanks for listening. Bye.